So I was visiting my mom the other day for the 800th time this year, and I looked in her fridge and I was like, what in the hell are these things? And I guess they were like some raspberries that looked like they were from like 1940. So I tossed those. She did have some eggs that actually weren't expired. So that's something. But let me tell you something my mom always has plenty of, and that's dental floss, or those like floss pick things. My mom is fanatical about flossing and brushing her teeth. It's like an obsession. She also has like a strange fear or dislike of getting wet. And she rarely would go swimming when I was younger unless she was wearing like some kind of full body hazmat suit. And speaking of family phobias, my dad had like a pathological fear of birds. Like if one was flying nearby, he would like run into the house. I mean, they just freaked him the hell out. I'm not really sure where my dad got this fear of birds from, but we all remember the kind of corny 1963 horror movie, The Birds, directed by the kind of cock Alfred Hitchcock. With Tippi Hedren as our lead actress in her film debut, it also had Jessica Tandy and Suzanne Plachette. It's loosely based on a 1952 short story of the same name by Daphne du Maurier. The movie was also somewhat inspired by a true mass bird attack on the seaside town of Capitola, California in 1961, where like hordes of seabirds were crashing into people's homes. The birds kind of went cuckoo. Cuckoo birds, get it? There was from some kind of toxic algae, but that wasn't known at the time. So maybe my dad heard about that shit and started fearing them then, but my dad, while cool as hell, was a fairly anxious person, which I definitely inherited. And it's not like I love birds. I mean, I think they're like the worst pets ever, but they don't totally freak me out. Rejection, generally from a girl, freaks me out. And many scenes for the movie The Birds were shot in Bodega Bay, California, which I need to visit at some point. Supposedly, Hitchcock told Tippi Hedren that some scenes were going to be like mechanical birds, but actual birds were used, which resulted in some trauma for the actress. I mean, Hitchcock was a great filmmaker, no doubt, but he was kind of a sadistic bastard for sure. It's like, I don't think directors have to like torment the actors. That either means you're not a good director or the actors aren't good actors. And speaking of Tippi Hedren and some weird animal shit, Tippi Hedren and her famous daughter Melanie Griffith were in a movie called Roar from 1981, directed by Noel Marshall. They used real animals, largely untrained, and 70 people were injured during the making of the film. The cinematographer Jean Dabont, who later directed the absolute classic must-see Speed from 1994 with Keanu Reeves, Sandra Bullock, and Dennis Hopper. Anyway, Dabont was bit by a lioness in the head. He almost got scalped and required 220 stitches, though he stayed on to finish the film. Melanie Griffith got accidentally clawed by a lion in the face, requiring 50 stitches, and Tippi Hedren herself suffered a fractured leg and scalp wounds after a mishap with an elephant and also a lion. It was kind of a dangerous, disastrous production, and to add insult to literal injury, the movie was also a massive flop. And you would think Tippi Hedren would have had her fill of wildlife, or at least stayed away from the fuckers, but she actually started the Shambhala Preserve, an 80-acre wildlife habitat for the care and preservation of lions and tigers. The Shambhala Preserve is in Los Angeles, and you can visit it. But for me, I think I'll pass. Hey, briefly on Melanie Griffith, check out the great 1975 detective noir Night Moves, directed by Arthur Penn, a pretty great director, with Gene Hackman as a Los Angeles private investigator searching for the teenage daughter of a former movie actress. The daughter is played by a 16-year-old Melanie Griffith. And there was some controversy at the time because there was a nude scene with her. James Woods has a memorable, God fucking damn it. James Woods has a memorable role. I still didn't even say it right. James Woods has a memorable role as a sleazeball mechanic. It's dark, cynical, just a time capsule of like a post-Watergate mid-1970s America. A must-see. Okay, where were we? Oh yeah, my mom and her teeth flossing obsession. So you know, I try to practice good oral hygiene. There was a period in my youth where I was like, fuck it, I'm not going to brush my teeth. Talk about rebel without a clue. It didn't last super long, but I've always been kind of prone to cavities, even when I was younger. And I actually got braces when I was younger, and this was like prehistoric times. And the dentist wanted me to wear this completely cumbersome metallic torture device at night that like hooked into my braces. And it was like, how can I sleep with this fucking thing? It would press against my teeth on the pillow and it would hurt. My dentist gave me some card to keep track of how many hours a night I was wearing the thing, and I eventually just basically stopped wearing it completely. But I kept recording it like, oh, I'm wearing it 7 or 8 hours a night on this little scorecard thing. And eventually the dentist, like after several months, was like, you're not even wearing this fucking thing, are you? And I was like, no. I vaguely remember him and like getting my parents all together for a meeting, and he kind of chastised me, and he eventually just took the braces off. I mean, my teeth aren't perfect, but they don't look too bad, so maybe the little amount of time I had the braces did some good, or maybe I didn't need the fucking things in the first place. So these days, I do go to the dentist regularly, and so I went to the dentist last week, and the hygienist was like, man, you need to floss. And I was like, I floss at least twice a day, I brush 2 to 3 times a day, I fucking use the water pick, I don't eat sweets, I'm just genetically prone, I guess. To paraphrase Jessica Rabbit, my teeth aren't bad, they're just drawn that way. That really doesn't make sense, but fuck it. So brush your teeth, kids, and floss, okay? Your mouth will thank you later. And I'm guessing the median age podcast listener of this podcast is about 92, so maybe most of you have dentures, but hey, take care of those too. And luckily, I do still have my night guard, which I've thrown away like 3 times in the past, but I think I've learned my lesson, and every morning when I wake up, I immediately put it in its little case in the goddamn bathroom. Okay, on with the show.
You are my density. You are my density.
Okay, very briefly on the debacle that was the Jake Paul-Mike Tyson fight. It was as bad as could be imagined, even worse. It was like 2-minute rounds instead of the usual 3-minute rounds, and Mike Tyson showed every bit of his age. He was almost out of gas after the first round. And the most shocking part of the fight was the pre-fight interview with Mike Tyson in the dressing room. And after the interview, Tyson turned around and walked away, and the viewing audience got a glimpse of his 58-year-old bare ass as he walked away. My mom and I were like, what just happened? And it reminded me of an interview after a fight in the dressing room with my favorite fighter ever, Juan Manuel Marquez. He was in the dressing room naked, and Max Kellerman, the announcer, came in to interview him. And Marquez was holding a sombrero over his crotch. It was like hilarious and so cool. This was actually after the third fight with Manny Pacquiao, which I actually thought Marquez won. But yeah, the Tyson-Paul fight was a farce to begin with. I mean, a couple of the undercards were enjoyable, but I just can't really get into watching females fight each other. One of the undercards was two ladies fighting each other. I mean, I'm all for equality and all that, but there's just something unenjoyable to me about seeing women fight. And as far as the Tyson-Paul fight itself, there was actually more action in the Will Smith-Chris Rock's dust-up at the 2022 Academy Awards, a.k.a. the slap heard round the world. And the most damage Mike Tyson inflicted in the Jake Paul fight was actually to Mike Tyson's glove itself, which pretty much he was constantly biting throughout the fight. Afterwards, somewhat humorously, Mike Tyson was asked about him biting the glove, and Tyson said, "I have a biting fixation." Well, better to bite your glove than someone's ear, so I guess that's progress. But yeah, let's hope Mike Tyson stays out of the boxing ring. He had his heyday, and that's long ago past. I mean, Jake Paul was pretty classy after the fight, but I do hope someone kicks his ass at some point. He's yet to fight someone, like, really legitimate. And really quickly on Mike Tyson, goddamn, I used to love the late 1980s Nintendo game Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. He would fight Glass Joe. He was like the easy fighter. He obviously had a glass jaw. There was Bald Bull and Mr. Sandman and Mike Tyson himself. It was such an old school game. Pretty fun, pretty easy to play, but just totally awesome. My parents also got me the ColecoVision video game system, which back in the ancient 1980s had pretty good graphics for the time. It had a really solid version of Donkey Kong. And ColecoVision actually came out with like a computer system called the Atom around 1983. I remember it had like a disc drive and tape drives that you would play games on. They kind of had like an unimpressive version of the game Dragon's Lair. I wanted this thing so badly, my parents got it for me, and I just remember the damn computer being so glitchy, it just wasn't ready for prime time. I remember the printer was like the loudest thing ever on the planet. I mean, it sounded like a construction site. And I tried to love this fucking thing, but it was just a mess. But I still have a strange affection for the goddamn thing. Okay, let's move on here. So I decided to go see the new Hugh Grant in villain mode movie, Heretic, directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods. They also wrote and directed the kind of crap sci-fi action film 65 from 2023 with the dud Adam Driver. But I usually even like crappy sci-fi movies, to be honest. But anyway, Heretic is about some Mormon missionaries who are going door-to-door to try and convert some people, and they come across somewhat of a religious nut played by Hugh Grant. They get stuck in his house, things get weird, there's a lot of philosophical mumbo-jumbo. It's definitely worth seeing, though. I was maybe expecting a little more. I mean, it didn't blow me away, but I'm glad I saw it. And Hugh Grant is a charming psycho. And this actress, Sophie Thatcher, I guess she was also on the TV show Yellowjackets, and this fairly interesting-looking movie, Companion, that's coming out in theaters in 2025. Anyway, I mean, I thought Sophie Thatcher was pretty great. Really good actress. Seems interesting. Seems intelligent. The other missionary played by Chloe East, she didn't do much for me. And I almost didn't even recognize Topher Grace, who played one of the elder Mormon missionaries. The movie isn't, like, quite as twisty or clever as I was hoping, but again, it's pretty solid. And so anyway, when I was buying tickets for the movie, I mean a ticket, I went by myself, what else is new, but they have these D-box seats, which I guess are kind of like immersive. They can move a bit or kind of rattle during dramatic scenes on screen. You know, they're choreographed with the movie. I'm not really sure why I decided to buy one of these D-box seats, but the little kid in me just said, go for it. And in a way, I am still kind of a kid at heart. Yes, I'm middle-aged or more. Yes, I hope I'm more than middle-aged. I'm getting sick of this shit, guys. I'm 6'3", 200 pounds. You know, just a kid who's trying to stop drinking alcohol, trying to stop using nicotine, and trying to stay from a couple other vices which cannot be named here. So yeah, I'm basically just still a kid. And this D-box seat soon became annoying. It would rattle around during like stormy weather scenes. There was an interesting part where the missionaries were like going up a staircase and the chair kind of tilted, or it kind of felt like it did. And I'm probably the only person in the world that shelled out the extra bucks for a D-box seat for the movie Heretic. But again, I'm glad I did. It was something different. But would I ever buy another D-box seat? Oh, hell no. And most of Heretic really plays out in one house. And speaking of houses, this is kind of a stretch here, guys, but there's been several patients in the psych hospitals that I've worked at that have called me Dr. House, which refers to the Hugh Laurie character, the kind of pill-addled, kind of genius doctor from the TV show House. And I guess maybe I have a slight resemblance in some way. I'm a little bit gaunt, usually unshaven, so I don't necessarily mind the comparison. But a lot of times patients, and remember these are psychiatric patients, will say to me, thanks, doc, or whatever. And I'll say, oh, I'm not a doctor, though I do play one on TV. Most people don't understand that reference, but what the hell. And although I am a registered nurse, an RN, my initials are actually MD. You know, like medical doctor, or medical deviant, if you prefer. So whenever I have to initial something with my title afterwards, I sign it MD-RN. So I guess in a way I kind of am a doctor. Hang on one sec here. I have to write myself a quick prescription for Vicodin. I'll be right back. But I am an ordained minister. Yes, I can perform a wedding service. And I got it for free from this website. It's called the Universal Life Church. And if you've been looking for an easy way to get a doctorate, well, head to the Universal Life Church and you can become a doctor of divinity for only $20. And yes, this is the same doctorate that Hunter S. Thompson bought. And you would frequently see him using the term doctor, although I don't think many of the copious amount of substances that he used over his lifetime were prescribed, and all that shit led to his somewhat sad and slow diminishment and eventual suicide. And yes, I've got some ever-increasing gray hairs, and one patient would kind of whisper, Silver Fox, to me as I walked by her. And I'm pretty tall, I'm kind of long-limbed, and one patient had a memorable nickname for me. She would call me Lanky Gray. I actually said memorable correctly there. Oh yeah, and sorry, I forgot. One more thing on Hugh Grant. Do you remember his arrest in 1995? He picked up a sex worker named Divine Brown on the corner of Sunset Boulevard and Courtney Avenue. It's not too far from where the Coach and Horses bar used to be, where I went on a date, one date with Regis Philbin's daughter, and I got blindingly drunk. Anyway, Hugh Grant got busted by the cops for lewd conduct in his car, and his mugshot is just a classic look of sheepish embarrassment. And at the time, he was going out with just a knockout, Elizabeth Hurley. But, you know, who knows why we do the things we do sometimes. But I will never forget just a super clever quote from the time. Remember, his name is Hugh, and the girl's name was Divine. And the quote was, "To err is Hugh, to forgive Divine." And well done, whoever said that. So the other day, I was having a perfectly pleasant afternoon. Well, actually, a horrible afternoon here in Sunnyvale. And then on my TV came a commercial about Peyronie's disease, which causes, like, curved penises in guys. And I'm like, is this so common that a commercial is necessary for this condition? Of course, they couldn't show actual crooked dicks on TV, so the gimmick was that they showed a bunch of bent, curved carrots that basically looked like penises. And there was, like, a bunch of dick-looking carrots floating around on the TV screen, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? I mean, can't I watch TV without looking at or thinking about a curved dick? Is that too much to ask? And I think the website for the medication is literally bentcarrot.com, so they're really sticking with this carrot metaphor. And I guess it is maybe more common than I thought. I guess maybe like more than 1 in 11 have it, but aren't all dicks like kind of curved a little bit? You know what? I've exhausted this topic, so no more speak of carrots or dicks. And hey, have you heard of the new time travel horror movie on Netflix called Time Cut? Well, I watched it for you and it sucks. The lead actress is decent, but the storyline could fit on a cocktail napkin and it's just badly done. It's not scary. And after you see the climax, it's like, that's it? Totally Killer from 2023 has a kind of similar plot. And while Totally Killer wasn't killer, it's way the hell better than Time Cut. Okay, a couple quick songs to mention, then we're out of here. Sometimes I go to the local Safeway to buy a bottle of wine, and every fucking time I go there, there's one goddamn checker open with like five people in line. And these people usually have baskets full of shit. I have this one fucking bottle of wine, and these deplorable bastards don't see me and let me go in first. The other day I was in line, and I literally just put the bottle on the floor and walked out. Then I drove like 10 minutes away to the local BevMo, grabbed a bottle, and yes, of course, one goddamn cashier is open and some asshole is buying 40 bottles of tequila. I was about to blow a gasket, but then the song Cherish by Madonna started playing and it relieved my misery. I mean, what a great song, catchy, fun, upbeat, and it helped pass the time and it put me in a better mood. Never underestimate the power of a good song to brighten your mood. Cherish the thought of always having you here by my side. Oh baby, I cherish the joy you keep bringing it into my life. I'm always singing it. And lastly, I was at Sprouts literally yesterday buying some stuff and I heard something playing on the speakers and I just stopped for a moment and was like, oh my God, hell yes. I almost couldn't stop dancing to the chorus in the aisles. It was the 1985 song Dare Me by the Pointer Sisters. I mean, it was like a complete fun injection. It's just a great song. It does have kind of an awkwardly written opening lyric. I've got a chip on my shoulder with your name on it. I don't know, it just sounds weird. But the chorus is just one of those that gets me going. And after I left Sprouts, I proceeded to play the song at least 25 times in a row. And little things like that can just change my outlook for the day. So anyway, here's a little bit of that chorus. And hey, get out of the house, go to CVS, go to the grocery store, go to Safeway and keep your ears open. You may just run across a song that makes you feel great. And even if you've got a bent carrot, it's not the end of the world. Baby, make your move, step across that line. Touch me one more time, come on, dare me. I dare you to dare me.